Welcome to Scrappy ABM, your source for groundbreaking approaches that don't break the bank. ABM shouldn't cost $200K in tech to even get started. So if you want to get started with ABM or make your program even better without investing a massive amount of money, you're in the right place. Each week, we'll hear from the brightest minds in the marketing world who are redefining ABM, achieving incredible results with untraditional methods, limited resources, and a whole lot of creativity. This isn't a show about how much money you can spend on fancy tech or overhyped tools. Instead, it's about celebrating creative problem solving and the scrappiness it takes to get ABM right. We'll dive into how these marketing leaders built robust ABM strategies with limited resources, revealing the actionable insights that led to their biggest wins. So if you're a marketer ready to challenge the status quo and build a scalable, efficient, effective marketing strategy, Scrappy ABM is the show for you. So if you're ready to discover ABM strategies that are lean, impactful, and utterly transformative, let's dive into this episode. Welcome to Scrappy ABM, your podcast with practical playbooks that you can go and implement today. This is your host, Mason Cosby, and today I'm joined by Mike Montague, who is the VP of Franchise Strategy over at Sandler. And let me tell you, I'm super excited to be joined by Mike because I think we share a bond of having worked in marketing at sales education companies, which is like a very small pool of the world. But especially as we get into the ABM, so much of ABM is, from a marketing perspective, getting into the mind of how to best partner with your sellers. So I'm really excited to dig into a lot of the strategies that Mike has got for us today. Mike, thank you for joining me.
Yeah, great to be here. And I'm excited to talk about it with you for the same reason. I think so much of marketing is obviously focused on like lead generation that we forget what happens after we pass that off, or we just expect that salespeople can magically close the sale after we qualify a lead.
Yeah. And I'm excited specifically because as we dig into what we're talking through today, you know, you and Sandler have really gotten the buyer's intent, which is, if you go into marketing, there's like all this talk around intent. But again, we've missed, I think, the definition of intent, which is like, why are buyers buying? What is their intention in actually buying something? Not, oh, they're searching on Google and they've got a G2. Like, what's the intention? That's what intent is. So as we think about today, you're going to be digging into kind of the four different buyer intents. So I'm excited to dig into that. And as we think about where those would fall in a funnel of pipeline generation, acceleration, or customer expansion, where do you think this falls generally?
I think it's probably in the acceleration bucket. There's obviously some things that we can do in the top end of getting some trigger events and finding out like, okay, do they have a need right now? Is this a wish for the future kind of thing? And in the top of the funnel, there is some interesting stuff there that we've found in our marketing and nurturing sequences. But really, I think it's more about accelerating these conversations and really getting to the heart of the matter and moving these deals forward that are qualified that we're talking to.
I love it. So if you're trying to figure out how to accelerate your deals, this is going to be a great episode for you. With that, I think before we say anything else, we got to figure out like, what are the four buyers' intents? So can you go ahead and quickly outline what those four intents are?
Sure. This is classic Sandler stuff. David Sandler came up with it with a psychologist in the 60s, and it's really based around human behavior. So it's worked for millions of salespeople in multiple countries, 17 different languages, at least that we have locations in and stuff. So these are some tried and true psychological methods of why people do anything, right? The first one and most powerful is a pain in the present. If you break your leg, you don't start shopping around doctors and being like, oh, which one's cheaper and get me in. You're blank check, solve my problem. I have a pain right now that I need fixed. So that one, I think, is what most people focus on if they've been in sales and marketing for a long time. But if you haven't, you think about stereotypical overhype of pleasure and instant gratification, we think is the highest motivating factor, but that's actually number three on the list. So pleasure in the present comes in at number three, which is a nice motivating factor. People will buy something. If you're at the checkout lane and you see a candy bar there and you're like, ooh, I want a Snickers today. Why wait? You could treat yourself to that. But you notice my example is a lot smaller thing. Nobody says, oh, let me just buy a car today because I feel like it, or let me write a blank check to make myself feel better. It's not quite as motivating as that pain. So the one that comes in at number two is fear. That's pain in the future. We as human beings and creatures on this planet will do a lot to avoid pain as well. So these are things like insurance or preventing a problem or maintenance contracts, things that are going to keep us from suffering pain in the future. And you can tell in those examples too, that it's not quite as big and blank check as a pain in the present either. It's definitely a lower motivation. And sometimes in these middle buckets, depending on how big or small the reward is and the investment, these may flip back and forth. But generally, the one that comes in fourth and last is pleasure in the future. So a gain in the future, we sometimes don't even believe will pay off, right? This is saving for retirement. And you're like, well, I might not even live to see retirement. Or there's a lot of other things in the immediate term that could require my money and investments and time and attention. So people generally aren't interested in spending a lot in the future. But what we found is in our marketing research in our ABM is that these are motivating in that way. That sometimes in marketing, the gain messages tend to do a little bit better than more maybe neutral feature and benefit, interest, curiosity messages. But when you find somebody, and especially for like booking a meeting with salespeople, so we're talking about middle of the funnel content here, is if you want somebody to book a meeting, they have to have a problem right now. They need a pain in the present that they're trying to solve. Otherwise, it's not a priority. Let me look at it again in 30, 90 days. Are you with me on that one?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And as I'm just thinking through, again, I'm a small business myself, but that's had some pretty significant scale. And then there are things that I know will be problems, and I don't buy those because I have problems right now that I'm trying to solve for.
Right.
And I'm already up to here, so I can't think that far in the future. I can only think about how do I solve today? If I don't make it through today, I'm not making it to tomorrow anyway. And that inevitable benefit I won't even make it.
So what happened in our funnel is we took, and I think another common mistake a lot of marketers make is they think it's about us and our product or services. So if you take a generic product-based campaign and we were getting about 6 appointments per 3,000 people in our list, in our contacts that we were nurturing. When we switched it to a pain-based buyer-focused email, we got 6 appointments in 300 contacts. So what we did is we split up in HubSpot four different campaigns, actually 5, because we had the generic one. Then we had one on each of the pain buckets, and we looked for ABM triggers that would help us sort those into those groups. So when we only had 300 people that fit our pain in the present criteria, but 6 of them set an appointment. So our conversion percentages went way up. The clicks and opens went way up. Some of the list numbers go down, which isn't a bad thing, right? You're spending less money to market to these people because they're more qualified, but our numbers of conversions are going up. The same thing also happened in the pleasure in the present emails. So it wasn't quite as high a bump. We had more opens, but we had less conversions. So that's really interesting. People are like, ooh, if I said typical marketing spam, like, learn how to make $1 million or start $1 million business this weekend. A lot of people are going to click on that. And a lot of people are going to realize that's probably not realistic, not going to happen. And so they don't set that appointment and talk to the salesperson. So when we look at these numbers, it's really interesting because we can be fooled by the matrix of these measurements that one might get more opens and we go, oh, that message resonated. But if we don't look all the way through the funnel, we don't see which one was really getting the results for us.
Yeah, and I want to really specifically call out the, you had generic messaging and it did all right. But again, by segmenting based on actual pains and reasons, and this is something I've been talking about a lot, it's like, what's our reason to reach out? Again, you actually segmented by, you have a very clear pain in the present that we can help you solve. So because you aligned the intent with a clear reason to reach out and what they were experiencing in that moment, much higher conversion metrics. And also, if I were to make a guess, people probably closed at a higher rate because they were met in the moment where they were that way earlier in the funnel. And you just worked that same message through the entire process.
So that's where I was going to go next is if you're a salesperson, which person would you rather call? Somebody that says, I have a problem right now, please talk to me. Or somebody that says, I have a problem 3 years down the road, that I might like to solve, or I'm doing really good, but I could always be better. That's not a bad place to be. But if I was a salesperson, I want somebody that's got a problem right now. They got budget to solve it, and they have a decision-making process that's going to be fast because they're not going to waste my time. So then we pass all of those triggers and which emails they clicked on and which pains they resonated with over to the salesperson, and the salesperson just picks up the phone and or gets on that call because it was already booked in HubSpot, gets on the call and says, hey, I see here that you were concerned about your margins on these deals. Should we start there? And the person says, yes. And it's a really easy sales conversation. We're not trying to like oversell or hype or have to reposition ourselves in that call when we go to make it.
I love the simplicity of it. What I'd love to dig into is, as you're thinking through the content, is it just the email messaging and the way that you're framing that email content? And it's simply, here are the problems that you're experiencing. You should book a call, yes or no. Or are there other content assets that you're pointing out towards that help further educate in that pain, in that gain experience?
No, we actually do this all the way through. I think I mentioned some of the data that helps us get people into those funnels is we'll create offers or so white papers, webinars, or blog posts, and we'll be sharing those in our ABM outreach and on LinkedIn. We might do several different campaigns at the same time. One that says, grow your sales team, hit your revenue targets this year. We'll put another one out there that goes, missing quota, need help right now. It's the same offer for the same webinar, but we have these different pain indicators. So that starts letting us know which ads get clicked on more, who clicked on those ads, and we can start putting them into the appropriate funnels as we go through.
And I love the simplicity of that. So again, it's the same offer. So again, you put a ton of time and energy and effort into one incredible offer, but then in your ad sets and your outbound promotional materials, you reframe that offer in a variety of ways, see what message resonates. And then based on how they came in, you can then segment out the follow-up based on what pain points they resonated with.
Yes.
Am I hearing that all correctly?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's simple A-B testing, but a lot of marketers A-B test, you know, the color of the button, the picture that's in the photo, the title. This is really about testing their interest. So we're trying to qualify the prospects for our solution in these messages. And that's really, I think, what Sandler does differently than everybody else is really a focus on the buyer and focus on qualifying. So it's okay if they want to sign up for our list and they want to be on the list for the next 2 years and they have a problem somewhere, that's fine. But we're not going to have our salespeople chase them down. We're looking for those people that have an immediate pain or one in the near future. Again, they have the budget to solve it and they're in this decision-making process. They've started the search for a solution so that we're not having to do demand creation when we're on those phone calls either.
I've not heard somebody else talk through, as I've talked with a variety of people around ABM, it's largely how do we create an original asset or repurpose an existing asset to focus on a specific vertical, and then we make the method, but not general necessarily, but like it's a pain-specific offer. It's a problem-specific right. offer. And then you reframe it in your outbound and in your ads. Like that's just really smart. And you're now able to extent way more easily potentially verticalize or go after different pain intents with the same offer, which is now created instead of one campaign because you had one offer for one campaign.
Right.
You created four campaigns or five or six off of one really solid offer. So it's like funnel at the top, funneled into an offer, and then funneled back out. And all your follow-up is really personalized and intentional. That's just really smart.
Yeah. And we take it one level deeper, but we also teach bonding and rapport and the DISC profiles. You basically put people into four buckets. So you've got people that are outgoing, people that are introverted. You've got people that are task oriented. They're the details like solution type people. Then you got other people who are people oriented. They're about the relationships, the people side of the equation, and not necessarily the results and tasks. So if we look at those four different areas of this quadrant, we also segment those campaigns by that. So technically, the four campaigns we've been talking about actually turn into 16 different campaigns because we can change the language. And a lot of this can be automated and stuff too. So especially with ChatGPT and other tools, we use one called Humantic AI, which will just rewrite the same email into a different disk profile. And so it's really funny when you look at these in our HubSpot instance, because the one for D's, these are the dominant big picture people that like don't waste time, think like Donald Trump. They want the too long didn't read version of it. The signature of the email actually shows up in the screenshot of the message because it's so short. It's five sentences and it says, do you want results? Do this, click here. And it's really short. But then we have these other people that are on the other end of the spectrum where they're really detail oriented and they want all the data and research. And so we're putting like bullets and facts and we got quotes and citations linking to other stuff in the same email for the same offer for that same pain in the present. And we saw those increase like our conversion rates by 30% too when we start figuring out how to segment those. So really, I think my message here today is however you do it is you got to focus on the buyer. Because if we just said, oh, we're big picture people and we solve big picture problems and we want them to buy this product, it's not good enough. In today's world, We all want personalized outreach. We all want it to be about us and we want to know that the vendor that we're choosing understands us and our problems and our world. So when I'm teaching this stuff to salespeople, I think about how can we tell the buyer's story better than they can tell it themselves? That they don't even realize these things about their problems. When we get to that, we get really good conversions.
There's a lot that I want to dig into, but I try to keep these episodes short. So Mike, we may need to bring you back for another episode.
Yeah.
Like the biggest question that I want people to take away or that I really need to dig into so people can go and do this is like from a tech perspective, you mentioned HubSpot, you've mentioned a couple other tools. Like what are the actual tools that you use to execute a program like this, where you've got your four campaigns that have then four subset campaigns under each campaign?
So we use Sixth Sense for the intent data. We're using HubSpot for the tools to run all this and the different sequences and workflows. Humantic AI, I mentioned, it will append your contacts with the appropriate DISC behavioral profile, personality profile, so that you can segment them into campaigns. And then it will also help you rewrite those campaigns so you can rebuild them quickly. We have a bunch of other tools. We're using a lot of LinkedIn advertising. We use an outside agency as well and get some help with it and have a really great internal team that actually does a lot more of this than I do. So I'm stealing their thunder today. But there are several tools, but I wouldn't say we spend a lot on the advertising. I wouldn't say we spend a lot on the tools for our size.
Yeah. Again, I'm listening through, you guys are using Sixth Sense for intent, but it's like, how do we get some form of intent data? There's a variety of sources you can use for that. You've got a CRM, which is HubSpot. Again, I think HubSpot is a very affordable CRM, but you can use whatever you've got. You've got Humantic AI, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Okay. So you've got
Others too. There's like Crystal Nose, or you can even just start guessing or using other types of personality traits or triggers in your campaigns to search. One thing I found is you can ask people too on any of this stuff. So you can just say, hey, are you interested in this content or this content? Or run some different split tests on offers to see who goes where and start getting more specific too. You don't even really need a tool for it.
Yeah. And I love it because, again, as I'm thinking through this, you could pretty easily just segment out based on potentially, because I was thinking through some of the kind of pro tips around cold outbound that I'm seeing from companies like Lavender that are largely focused on executive leaders are saying like emails that are under 100 words or less or 100 words or less. And now I'm trying to think through, is that the result because of who they're targeting and how the criteria is built out, or is that just good? So now it's got me thinking a lot more around the emailing of persona-based content. So anyway, sorry, you got me now thinking through a lot of stuff. Only thing I wanted to really re-emphasize is, again, some people may hear this and like, it's a lot of work. And if I was targeting 3,000 with general messaging and I still got six meetings, like why would I go after 300 with very specific messaging where I still get six meetings? Like the net is six meetings either way. And what I want to say to those people is you have now potentially 10 times the audiences. So if you can get personalized message, like in your messaging and conversion metrics hold the same, general messaging to 3,000 for six meetings to now segments of 300 to get 60 meetings. No, it's probably not going to hold exactly that way, But from a philosophy perspective, that's how you would do it. Mike, is there anything that I missed?
I love all of that. And I think, again, with qualification, the one thing that we haven't talked about that I'd leave people on is that getting no's and unsubscribes aren't bad either. So one of the funny things we found in our data was that those high C personalities had the highest unsubscribe rate, right? If you misspell a word in their email, they're like, oh, well, these guys are unprofessional and they unsubscribe, or they opt themselves out of stuff because they're managing a zero inbox and stuff, which is great too. So sometimes by disqualifying, we think that we're costing ourselves business. What we're doing is we're saving time and money focusing on the people who can and will buy from us.
I love that. And we both share a friend in Jay Schwedelson, and just his thought processes around don't fear the unsubscribe. If anything, people unsubscribing from you actually increases your overall engagement rate, which then helps your deliverability, which is like more nerdy side of marketing. But don't fear the unsubscribe. As long as you're not spamming people to death and getting over a 0.3% unsubscribe rate per email, you should be fine.
But think over the course of a 10-year career, think how much money you would save marketing to 300 people instead of 3,000, right? Those small things add up over time in our list.
Yeah. All right. We're coming up on time and there's a thousand things I still want to ask you. So let's say somebody is like, man, Mike is clearly a smart guy, knows what he's doing. Where can people find you?
Just find me on LinkedIn. It's Mike D. Montague, or if you search in Google, Mike Montague, there's about 1,000 in the world, but I still come up on the first page. You'll see the bald head. You can find me there. If you want more information on Sandler, go to Sandler.com. We have over 200 locations, so there's one near you. If you want to talk about what's not converting on the sales side of your ABM and business development challenges, that's where we focus. What happens after you get the meeting and those human-to-human conference. Lots of free resources offer. Check out our funnel. Test it. Put your name and email in one of those forms. Get a free offer and see what we're talking about here.
I love it. All right, Mike, last question for you before we call it a day. Anything else that you want to share with the audience about getting started with account-based marketing?
Ooh, I think we've covered most of it here today. I would say have fun with it. This is about using tools to reach a wider audience that you wouldn't be able to reach on your own, and getting more information into your pipeline so you can have better conversations. And I think if you just think about it that way of, I'm going to optimize my life, my time, who I'm talking to by getting in front of the right people, getting more information to and about those people, and getting more opportunities from those people into my pipeline, why would you say no to that?
Yeah. I want to call this out. And for those of you that don't know, Mike actually has a podcast dedicated to a fun and how to have fun as an adult. I love the call out of like, have fun with this. Because if you make really personalized and very specific campaigns, you can get really nuanced. And some of my favorite programs of all time are one-to-one ABM programs where we build an entire campaign for a specific account. You get so nuanced in it that it's just like, okay, they've clearly paid so much attention to us as an organization that like we have to respond. And those are some of the most fun campaigns. So anyway,
I agree with you. Let me give one quick hack, which is if you're ever end up looking for a job in marketing, it's really fun to do one-to-one marketing campaigns to a hiring manager or to a company you're trying to get hired by, and create some really fun LinkedIn ads. And they're seeing your face all over the internet and retargeting campaigns. And I've had people send pizzas with their hire Mike spelled out and pepperoni on the top. You can get really creative and really have fun when you get specific and you have that really big dream account that you've always wanted to land. Those are fun.
I love it. Mike, again, thank you so much for joining me today. Go check Mike out on LinkedIn. If you don't know who Sandler is, fix that. They have great content specifically for your sellers. And if you're a marketer trying to figure out how to work better with your sellers, Sandler's got great content to help you get there. This has been Scrappy ABM. We hope you all enjoyed. Thanks. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Scrappy ABM. If you enjoyed this week's episode, go ahead and give us a follow so that you don't miss a single episode. We drop every single Monday so that you can start your week off right. And if you're looking for additional great content just like this, go check out scrappyabm.com. We're building a library of frameworks, guides, templates, processes, and tools so you have everything that you need to build a low-budget, high-impact, scrappy program. Again, thank you for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. This has been your host, Mason Cosby, and we look forward to seeing you in the next one.